Bran's father sat solemnly on his horse, long brown hair stirring in the wind. His closely trimmed beard was shot with white, making him look older than his 35 years. He had a grim cast to his gray eyes this day, and he seemed not at all the man who would sit before the fire in the evening and talk softly of the age of heroes and the children of the forest. He had taken off father's face, Bran thought, and donned the face of Lord Stark of Winter. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast. Donning the face of Lord Stark for executing somebody, which I swear sort of has a tenuous connection to our episode this week. But also in reading this quote, I realize, you know, every once in a while I'm reminded everyone in this series is way younger than I think they are in my head. Like, oh yeah, wait a minute. I'm used to thinking of Ned being, you know, much older than me, right? No, Ned is my age. Ned is my age. So, cool. Now I feel old. Oh, man. Oh, well. Them's the breaks. Welcome back to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chum. I'd say that once I committed to fine episode. There's a Easter egg, so to speak, for listeners we've had for a very long time. Even with Carol saying it. Instead, I do have some folks with me this week. We've got our two new co-hosts on, I guess this is officially Team Westeros now. Because Scott has declared the other team Essos last week. So,
I mean, it makes sense, I guess, until we come up with something great, which I don't know how devoted I am to coming up with a great team name.
I'm pretty okay with Westeros. I don't know. Do you have any?
Yeah. I mean, you got that Valor in Westeros.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that
the Facebook group?
There's a connection. Are you guys in that Facebook group?
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Tyler, are you in there?
However.
Okay, sweet. Yes. The whole team is.
I will have to. I have a disclaimer on that one. Since it's a public Facebook group. And not a lot of people know about my geekdom, nerddom. I rarely post anything because then it will post on my main Facebook, and then I get a lot of questions. So
let's be real here, though. Like, in today's day and age, isn't it way better to see random nerd posts from a friend than literally anything about their political beliefs?
That's true. Or you could just not do either.
Yeah. My boss sent me a friend request this week, and she said something today at work about, oh, hey, thanks for accepting that. I hope you don't mind my political rants or something like that. I was like, oh, I will ignore them just as hard as I ignore all of my, well, I didn't say actual friends, but however I worded that, I don't remember now, but.
Yeah, around the Memorial Day, I finally broke down and accepted a friend's invite from someone I work with. And then something got posted from First Player Championship.
Yeah.
And I won, and I had, like, you know, a mat over my shoulder, and I was holding cards. And so, clearly, that Monday or that Tuesday morning, she came in and was all like, do you cosplay? Do you get, like, what are you doing? Why did I see a picture with, like, you and cards and a mat, and you won something? He's like, we need to talk. And I'm all like, no, we don't. We
that,
really don't.
That sounds like someone you can recruit.
I don't have friends on my Facebook page that I work with. So,
oh.
It's great. I'm Robert, by the way. Mixie. Speaking right now, so.
Aside from Bob trying to hide his fame and fortune from the rest of his life, emphasis on fortune for the First Player Championship, I'm sure. Let's go ahead and take a look at diving into our topic for the week. No surprises here for folks or my co-hosts. I'm ready to just get rolling with this episode because it turns out there's still a shitload of stuff to do this week to get ready for nationals. So let's see what happens. We are bringing back a segment that we have not done quite some time on the show. And that segment in particular is Berlitha. Now, some of you, I'm sure, are going to be hearing that and saying, wow, that's weird. It sounds like maybe Brienne of Tarth's ugly cousin or something. But it is actually an acronym for ban, errata, restrict, or leave it the hell alone. So this is a segment that Greg started up a very long time ago in first edition, and we're going to continue it now. And I'm still leaving errata in as an option, even though F of G has pushed very hard against doing errata in second ed. But I do still think, like, for some things that it can be an elegant solution. So let's kind of give it a try here and see how it goes. I've got 10 cards picked. Some will not surprise you. Some will surprise you. So let's start with the first card, Euron Crow's Eye. This is the King of the Isles. What is the exact name of the box? This is the Greyjoy box.
That sounds good. King of the Isles.
Yeah.
I don't exactly remember, but
yeah, Kings of the Isles. There we go. I know a couple of the titles are ever so slightly different. Fury of the Storm is slightly different than the
I think it's because, like, every captain is a king. Mm. Maybe that's why they had multiple kings, right?
Oh, could be. Yeah. I think there's an event that does that.
Who knows?
I don't really see much play on that, though. So, okay. Euron. Here we go. This, of course, to give everybody a quick overview, that's the six-cost one with Intimidate. All three icons searches out Silence. And drops it straight into play whenever you play him. So I'll wait to throw my thought out because I've been doing a lot of talking. But what do you guys think? Ban, errata, restrict, or just leave it the hell alone?
I mean, I can go ahead and answer this one.
I don't know if we trust you on this one, Bob. You are a notorious Greyjoy player, and they are markedly at the top of the heap right now.
I mean, I kind of don't want to be at the top, because then, you know, 40% of the field is playing them, and I kind of like to be like, oh, I just want to play these guys. They're like my faction, you know? Looking at him, I mean, he's very, very good. So of those three choices, he would have to probably be restricted, as much as I hate saying that currently right now. just out of pure efficiency. It's just what you're getting for that 6 gold. With getting silence and then getting free warships every turn. It's definitely...
Yeah. Even just right when you play him, you're getting 10 golds worth of value. Not even counting
the warships. The thing is like if you get him first turn, that means treachery isn't working because you're probably winning the initiative. If you're, you know, have a deck that wins initiative that first turn, or if someone was like, oh, let's go ahead and give, you know, Greyjoy initiative first turn, even if I won it. Now that treachery is not going to work. Now that begging brother, you know, that you might be able to bestow a few gold on, isn't going to work. So really, it just comes down to, you know, Vince versus Vince. And right now, that's kind of what the Greyjoy mid-range matchup is about. Like, who stops Euron with their Vince? So, and that alone is probably is what makes it a restricted card.
I think that's fair. They're already kind of choosing between some of their value efficiency sort of cards, some card advantage of a sort with things like, say, Iron Mines, which admittedly doesn't get chosen often these days. But, you know,
and that's like the flavor. And that's like the issue right now. And I know like Glazer kind of pointed out yesterday in that Facebook chat is when you have Drowned God Fanatic on the list. That means, like, every other card you put on the list for Greyjoy is, like, automatically a banned card. Because you're never going to pick another card probably over Drowned God Fanatic. So that means that Euron's technically banned. Like, if you put him on the list as, like, a banned card right now, because you're going to pick Drowned God Fanatic. So, and that's just...
So a restricted card, you mean, not a banned card.
Well, because...
actual banning is an option in this discussion.
Yeah. And that's where, if Drowned God Fanatic was just banned and never existed in gameplay ever again, then you actually have to make choices. And right now you don't make choices because you're always going to pick Drowned God Fanatic.
Gotcha. What about you, Tyler? Are you on the restrict train or would you push for something else with Euron?
I think it kind of depends on what your motivation is with the restricted list. If it's because the card is inherently in and of itself broken, I don't know if it is. I think it's extremely efficient, but it has 4 strength, which is a limit. It can ready twice per turn for 2 intimidates. Yeah, that's fairly good, but in and of itself, is it broken? I mean, you have things like Robert Baratheon standing twice to intimidate for 15 a turn now in this meta. You have other stand mechanics that can ready characters to do their shenanigans multiple times a turn. I think the biggest factor in it is how well it synergizes with all the things that came out in the box set and in the chapter pack since Greyjoy has become prevalent.
Yeah.
You know, arguably the biggest impact is the 2 initiative bump that comes on silence to almost guarantee you're going first every turn.
Yeah.
You know, with that, that's kind of a big deal. And of course you have all the other ships and everything that plays into that. Grey Ghost, Raining Longship, Maiden's Bane. When you start talking about all this stuff, it slowly progresses more and more towards being a restricted card. So,
you know, finish your thought there.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say one thing you made me think of was you mentioned that 4 strength. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people kick around something like Euron being restricted. But I think it's very interesting looking at that 4 strength because I think if the house strengths, like relative strengths, were rearranged right now, if like Targ happened to be at the top of the game, Euron would not be on anybody's radar, like in a vacuum the way he is right now. Like, sure, Greyjoy's at the top of the heap in part because of him, but in part because of a whole bunch of other factors.
I agree with that.
If it was just him and Targ was on top because of whatever X factors, I don't think he would be a concern.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think you even shift back towards playing core Euron then.
Yeah.
For that added strength bump. So it's all kind of relative, but you know, again, you have the warships that bump strength, the Iron Fleet scouts, other mechanics and attachments that can bump his strength, I guess, that maybe don't see play as much, but you're right. If Targ burn is a thing that's prevalent in the community, this guy is a prime candidate to be burnt every turn.
Yeah.
I think like one of the big things with Greyjoy, is like, it was just like a snowball effect. Like it started with the Victarion Greyjoy out of the chapter pack, having that synergy with the warships. And then, you know, the box comes out with Euron with the warships. And then they kept on saying, how do we draw cards? And then Alanis is printed, which synergizes off of Euron as well, who synergizes off of Victarion. So it's just like this huge rolling snowball of like Greyjoy's getting like perfect cards like right now that just slot easily into a deck that are hyper efficient. They're big bodies. They've had those big bodies from day one that once these bodies are on the board, if you can't control them in any way, they're just going to run away with it. And now like, I mean, design-wise, it sounded, I mean, on paper, it's like, wow, like let's have Alanis, and she's going to deal with these locations, and Euron's putting them out for free, and then we're tapping these locations to untap Victarion, and, like, it's like, oh, this is, like, so good, like, this, but at the time, it's like, they didn't really need all this, you know, it's just, like, one thing after another, and that's where I think they're just, you know, a bit out of control right now with their power level.
Yeah.
That's coming from a Greyjoy player, so.
You know what? Is what that made me think of is the way that Greyjoy has developed with the thought process that went into the cards and how they interact with each other really makes me wish that they did the same thing with the other factions, because these are so highly efficient, so well tuned, so well working together that, again, not any one piece in and of itself is broken, but when you get the chain going, it's incredible, right? And they missed out on doing that for many of the other factions, maybe with the exception of Stark. But they don't have any synergy like this. With Tyrell, we were talking about that on whether or not to take Mace off the restricted list. They don't have any other way to be relevant. They have nothing that...
You're jumping ahead in my list, so. Tyler. Man.
I mean, we could talk about Greyjoy for hours. So if you want to go to the next one, what's your input,
yeah.
Will?
Well, yeah, this is specifically about okay. Euron Crow's Eye, though, not necessarily Greyjoy as a whole. So I'm gonna go ahead and say my parting thought is, assuming other things are done to rein in Greyjoy, I think we should leave Euron Crow's Eye the hell alone.
Oh, I love it.
Partly because the next box coming out is Targaryen, and we know there's always a big boost to a particular house for several months after a box drops. So I actually expect Targaryen to be back on top of the heap before long. So if a couple other different things are tweaked, I think Euron will probably...
Yeah, and I think it all just comes down to Drown God Fanatic. If they ever decided to do a banned card, he's like one of three cards I'd like to see banned. Just so Greyjoy players have to have like some type of options and choices. Like if it was box Euron and you had to choose between box Euron and like chapter pack Vic. I mean, because they work so well together, let's just separate them. Like, okay, now how good is it? Which, I mean, it's still probably going to be pretty efficient, but just make some choices. But right now, there's just not a choice when Drown God Fanatic exists.
Well, there we go. That's the next card now. It wasn't originally, but let's go ahead and jump to Drown God Fanatic. We already know Bob wants to ban it. How about you, Tyler?
I wouldn't say I want to ban it. It just needs to be banned. So
okay. That's a legit distinction.
Okay. Just want to clarify that for the people.
Tyler, did I miss your thoughts? Would you ban it? Would you do something else? Just leave it restricted?
Pull it off the restricted list? I think it's very, very good. Something that probably should not have been printed to begin with, especially in that faction. So I would agree that I think if there is a card that needs to be considered to be banned, I think that's it in the meta right now. I think it's that impactful.
Like, I even thought, like, even if you took apart, like, the second ability with coming out of the dead pile, it's still really good, like, having, like, a character that you can actually marshal now if you really wanted to or had to, which you probably wouldn't, or just be able to, you know, put him in a dead pile. I mean, even that, it's still good. I don't know if it's, like, band-worthy that way, but if he was just not around, I think a lot of people would be happier.
Yeah, it would take a lot of pressure off of a lot of design and deck building across the
board. Yeah, but like I said, like in that previous segment, like really, who gets Drowned God Fanatic in that mirror match? I mean, it's just when it's like that, and that can dictate the game. Just even if I draw two and they only draw one, you know, in that opening, you know, 11, 12 cards, that changes a lot. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here we go. At first, I was going to kind of split these up at random. So, what do you guys think? Should they continue to be at random, or should I
lock sure whatever
the
you want to
other,
do
other Greyjoy card in next?
I mean, we can go ahead and do the other Greyjoy card.
All right. I had one other Greyjoy card, and this one I think is one that folks have not been talking about, but I think there is a good argument to be had in my mind that Alanis Greyjoy get restricted. card draw on top of the other things that Greyjoy has going for them. They already have such efficiency from kind of a pound for pound perspective, that when they have the card efficiency also to back that up, and they've also got, you know, Iron Gates and things as well, that is when it becomes a problem. The two butt heads against each other. Partly that's why Lannister is not a problem, right? In several of their characters, they do have that kind of pound for pound strength, but they have no draw to help back that up right now. Okay, they've got a little bit now with Bowels, but still. They had not for a very long time. So I think Alanis might be worth looking at for a restriction.
I don't think so. I mean, I like her cost. I mean, in a perfect world, you might be able to get three cards out of her a turn.
That's, I mean, that's like a lot of cards.
That's like the perfect
three
world.
Three cards though. A turn.
The best thing about her is just being able to get that card draw in the plot phase or in the marshaling phase. And again, I think it's just what we spoke about, the whole snowball effect and the synergies that, you know, pretty much all three of those characters have, Vic, Euron, and Alanis. But design-wise, maybe if you errated her to just once per round, would you think that would be better? I mean, it'd still be nice. I mean, I play her a lot. I mean, I don't know if I've drew three, maybe a few times, three in a round. But mostly it's, you know, I drop my warship, you know, in a marshaling phase just to draw another card that I could possibly marshal. That's usually the best I get out of it. And then obviously if you have Euron out, or if you run like Support of the People, things like that, you can get some more locations in during the challenge phase. But for her cost, maybe if she was like three strength, but really, if you're three strength or four strength, I don't know if that's a big difference. And the fact that her core card was just so bad.
I mean, it like, was
just awful.
But does any other house have like this type of easy draw available? Like the closest other analogy I can think of is probably Highgarden, which, yes, admittedly, also gives you a gold, but it's the next sort of just play something and draw a card multiple times card that I can think of.
See, I feel like there was like progressions, like when the designers was building Greyjoy. I just feel like this is like coming to my mind just randomly thinking about it. Like it started with the Reader, 5 cost, 4 strength, military intrigue.
Intrigue power.
He drew a card. Intrigue power, yeah. And he would draw off of like an unopposed challenge.
Yeah.
And it was like a unique unopposed challenge. And it was like once per round. Then they did like Aaron Dampier. Like again, the 5 cost, intrigue, power. And then he had insight and would draw off of Drowned Gods Dying. So I'm like, okay, that's better than the Reader. Then Alanis came. And she was better than Aaron and then better than the Reader. So I feel like they just messed up like 2 other times. They're like, we got to get this right on this 3rd try with her. That's almost what it seems like what they're doing. So,
But I
like her design. I could possibly see like a once per round on her because she'd still be, you know, solid. And that's probably still a player. But yeah, if you can get that up to 3 cards a turn, really. Really 4 if you want to like Night Flyer like in the dominance phase or something crazy. I mean, so yeah, you can get quite a few cards.
I don't know. I just don't think that Greyjoy should have so much card draw style card advantages they've got right now on top of the character beef. Well,
like
on
you mentioned earlier,
save
like when
card
she came
advantage.
Out, like the gates were out. So I mean, they're putting her out the same time that everyone got their gates. So
I think that the most realistic comparison is Wyman, right? So Wyman's one of those cards that's going to give you card advantage every turn, built into their mechanics, how it works, sacrificing a character. You can do it up to 3 times, you know, similar to how many times you're probably not going to use it all 3 times, but maybe you will towards the middle or late game. But look how effective and efficient that card made Stark and how impactful it is. So, you know, maybe something with a restriction on it once around, twice around, makes sense. I don't know if in and of itself it should be restricted. I think when you talk about restrictions, you want to do stuff that's going to inherently disrupt what the meta is. I don't think putting a restriction on her is going to disrupt the meta that much. It's not going to change Greyjoy that much because, again, you're theoretically just banning the card. No one's ever going to pick Alanis over a Drowned God Fanatic. So, you know, I don't think that's...
Oh, no. DGF is banned. Ian,
okay.
My world. I'm considering if I was doing all of these all at once,
gotcha,
and my particular choices all happened together in an FAQ.
But also at the same time, there's a card that's, you know, very similar, Littlefinger from the core set. I mean, it's 2 cards initially when you play them, and you get like a gold bump the following turn. And that card just never sees play like anywhere. So it's not like other factions can't get something similar, I guess. To what Alanis is providing, just having a body.
Alanis is every burst. Turn, though.
But even like, okay, Greyjoy games are going, what, 3 or 4 turns? So.
Well.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
if you get her on setup, it's,
oh, yeah.
It's, I mean, just nuts.
Yeah, I mean, she's very good, but I don't know if she's restrict worthy. Even in Drowned God Fanatic world, being gone, I just. Yeah, she's just a very, very solid body. I can see why you brought it up, though, because it is a card that kind of like goes unnoticed on how efficient she is, because everyone's talk about, you know, Euron putting out ships and things like that. And but yeah, she's definitely was part of the resurgence of Greyjoy lately, I do believe.
Oh, definitely. Okay. On to the next one then. Let's maybe kick it over to probably the second place house at the moment. We've mentioned the house roundabout a couple times. So let's take a look at Stark. Have a selection there that has definitely been on people's minds. First up, Skagos. Yeah. This one, I'm going to eat. We followed the historical white book under rating when we reviewed this when it came out. But it has definitely proven itself in Greyjoy, or in Greyjoy, geez, in Stark, as probably, is it the premier engine card, or is that Wyman? That's a tough choice here between the two, but it's up there. So, I'll you know what? I'm going to force Tyler to weigh in on this first.
So, I think to answer that question, the primary engine is still Wyman. You know, there's a lot of location hate right now with Stark and Greyjoy being so prevalent that I think there are ways to deal with it, and there's not as many ways to deal with Wyman short of, you know, milking him or mirror read on a turn-to-turn basis. So I think Skagos is very good. I think Skagos gives you the option of being much more flexible in your deck construction and not having to worry about things like, you know, having to play three of one copy of a card. You can run your two regular Catlins and then run one of the Fat Cats. You can run two of the Fast Eds and one of the Core Eds or the new Ed. So it's going to give you a lot more flexibility, a lot more options in choosing how to design and play your deck, which I like. I think the problem is when you're shifting from a 4-cost cat to a 7-cost cat and then getting the benefits of having both those cards theoretically on one turn. I think that's where you start running into issues, and I don't know if there's any other good examples of that, but that one is the one where you start talking about how the card is broken. What I do think it does offer is the option to get rid of negative attachments in a faction that doesn't have a good way to do that, which is what I think I like it the best for, as it gives you the flexibility to not only be an offensive card, but a defensive card and trigger some of your other character abilities too. So from that standpoint, I think it's probably way too efficient and probably needs to be restricted. Although I'd hate to see that happen because I don't know what Stark would do to have being able to answer for some of the meta calls right now.
We'll just have to figure it out. Restrict that card. Just throw it right up there. yeah. Like, Greyjoy can pseudo figure it out. Like, kind of more or less stop it for a little bit, because like you have Shipwrights, you have Murmur, you have Victarion, but then it's the standing phase, and you know those are some marshalling actions and stuff like that. So if they want to get their trigger off, they're going to get their trigger off. Even with that design of having it have to be like a standing character, I mean, that's still just so good. It is.
Well, it doesn't have to be a character.
Oh yeah, yeah, it could be anything.
That of course is part of the strength, right? You can say sacrifice a frozen solid to move it to a, you know, more tasty character, or hell, a ward potentially or something.
Yeah, maybe if it had something more to do with the shadows, because like it was a card that randomly had shadows on it.
Yeah.
And I remember like when I first read it and I'm all like, okay, this card is, you know, dumb. Like, why do they have shadows on this? So like maybe if it was like, hey, when a card comes out of shadows, then you get to do that effect. You know, something along that lines, because the card's never put in shadows. Like, there's no need for it to be in shadows. It's just a 2-drop location that now you get to do Summer again, and now you get to do Arya and get, like, a dupe, or, like Tyler mentioned, now I can switch to the 2-drop Arya, and I'm going to Valor next turn, and you can't save anything. So, yeah, any card, really any card that, like, searches the whole entire deck should definitely be looked at as, like, is this what we should have right now? And that's definitely a card that I would restrict.
Oh man, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it until you brought it up again. The fact that it has that just needless, arbitrary, doesn't make any sense shadows, and the opportunity to make that actually matter by making it a reaction to a card coming out of shadows. Yeah. I love the thought of Errata in that.
There we go. I would live with that. Yeah.
I changed my mind because of I would have said restrict, but I think that would be way cooler.
I mean, yeah, not I like think they it makes just sense. Don't have Mira like coming out of shadows every turn. So, but yeah, right. it does limit what they can do with it.
And I think it gives you an avenue to play some of those other Stark Shadow cards that you would never, ever really play in a standard deck.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's
yeah, that might push a whole different archetype into actually coming together as a deck. All right, cool. Okay. Well then, let's go to the next one that we've kind of hinted at there. Mira Reed. Everyone's favorite? Least favorite? Shadows card at the moment. She's but a pale shadow. See what I did there? Of her first edition self.
So,
but she's still really, really good.
So first edition would blank any card. Is that right? Like attachments also or locations?
Yeah. Any card in play. And when it was winter, she could blank two cards. And she went back into shadows, if I remember correctly, off of a Stark being killed as well.
So not just sacrifice. Oh, sacrifice and killed? Or killed?
Well, sacrifice wasn't a thing in first okay. set, but discarded or killed. Let's go find a copy of her. Yeah, one non-plot card, two instead if it's winter. And then, her going back into shadows was even better than I remembered. It was after a Stark character leaves play, put Mira Reed into shadows. So for any reason, if a Stark left play, she went back to shadows.
Wow. I don't know how I would exactly word it with her, but I wish she still had something to do with winter. Just because it felt like they really tried to push Stark winter, you know, with a lot of their cards.
Yeah.
So having something with winter, like if it was like a winter plot, you know, maybe she could blank anything.
Yeah, just make her blank only happen when
yeah.
a winter
plot. But I would still let it be like anything.
Her reaction just be if Mira came out of shadows and a winter plot is revealed, blah, blah, blah. Everything yeah. else the same. That's what
so, I mean. Yeah, I think that's
I like that.
Yeah, and like I said, I'd keep it with like anything. She could blank whatever she could blank the first time around. So attachments, locations, characters. But yeah, I would definitely make it winter themed. Just because right now there's not really a good reason to play winter plots. and it really hasn't ever been that much. Not as much as summer, shall I say. I mean, there's some winter plots that, you know, see play. And a lot of it's like meta, though. It's like, I'm going to play two Barring the Gates because I think there's a lot of shadows going around now. But it's not like a winter deck or anything like that. So, but having her have some type of winter added into her text, I think would probably push, you know, playing now three or four winter plots, you know, instead of just playing like one or two.
What about the fact that that kind of card is the card that allows Stark to help compete against the Greyjoy decks? Are we focusing on keeping Stark where it is and raising everyone else up to that level to be able to compete with Greyjoy? Are we talking about bringing both of those factions down more in line with the other houses? So I think there are some drawbacks to her now with being one strength. And being able to deal with that. You know, thinking of cards that Hired Assassin can kill her, the new other card that Targ got in the latest pack that kills a one-string character. So there are some ways to deal with her that are coming around. Obviously, you can Drown God Fanatic her, but if that's going to be banned, then we don't have an option. But I like the idea of having something to deal with Greyjoy, but if we're considering this as a whole, I think you have to either errata her or restrict her.
Yeah, I don't know if like if Skagos was restricted and it had Wyman, I don't think Mira would belong. I don't know if they'd need all three on that list. I would probably prefer to separate Wyman and Skagos. One of the best things about her, though, is like she still gets to blank someone, and she's still a stealth character with two icons. So, so now she's like very efficient with what she's doing, and she's also a lady as well. So, if you ever, you know, needed that keyword for anything, not keyword, but trait, if you needed to like heir to the throne with her or something like that, something crazy if you had to. So,
all right. Well, let's, okay. If we're kind of sitting here considering Stark as a whole, I've got another different idea I wanted to float out there that might be kind of surprising. This one is Bran Stark, actually. This is another one that I have not seen people mention, but I think does actually play a very strong support role that could potentially be used as a way to slow a house down a little bit without just, you know, kicking it in the face like some other restriction that we've talked about or have been done in the past might do. Of course, he's a very strong control component. He gets used a lot as a sacrifice target, which is probably one of the bigger factors for my thought process, right? He's very frequently used not only as a sacrifice for his own ability to protect your own things and stop other people's means of stopping you, but also chucked in the way of a Skagos or a Wyman, or as was extremely popular for a while there, heir to the Iron Throne, brought back for a time with Fleabottom, still brought back now frequently with Summer. Of course, if he was restricted, you know, Stark still has some other kind of event control-y options with things like no surprises. I just think he would just kind of release a little pressure on the valve without really breaking anything about the house.
Yeah, and I think this is like kind of like a Stark like design is maybe like have these, you know, very low cost characters with lower strength, but have like really good abilities. I think one of the biggest things with Bran is like he's like this an auto include in any banner deck with Stark, right? So I mean it's like automatically, oh, I'm gonna play two Brans. That's now I just gotta find 10 more Stark cards, you know? And that's where like with restricting cards, it's like, do we want to make it more challenging for deck builders, or do we want to, you know, constantly have all these cards that are two of, three of that just are just auto included into every single deck, no matter what deck it is. And Bran does fit, you know, in probably every single deck, except for maybe Direwolves if you're playing, you know, a little bit older Bran.
I suppose you might,
but. Yeah, but I mean, it's very good. Maybe if it was like said something like remove them from game to, you know, cancel an event. That way you don't have to worry about it keep on happening all the time with recursion or throwing in like Isle of the Ravens and shuffling them back in and stuff like that.
All right.
I disagree. That card is fine as it is. Just need to leave it alone. It's canceling
good.
An event.
Man, I thought I was choosing something controversial here. Thank you for providing that. Tell me more.
Canceling an event, yeah, it's important, but there's so many event cancels that factions have. Obviously, Hand's Judgment, but you got Privileged Position, you have, he calls it Thinking, you have Someone always tells. You have all these other event cancels, a lot of which can't be canceled anyway because nobody else is running Hand's Judgment. So just leave it alone. Let it be. No reason to restrict or errata it. It's fine as it is. Flea Bottom's already restricted, so now really you're going to worry about it coming back with Summer and playing it again, which is now a 5-cost thing to cancel an event, put another 1-drop character into play. There's plenty of better targets you can target. I think just leave it alone.
You know, just to piggyback off that, I'd rather see Rickon if there is going to be a little Stark son. Rickon's just should not be around.
I thought about that with Rickon. He also does provide a bit of a pressure valve against opposing Skagos and against the Prince that was promised.
I mean, and At the Gates and Euron.
That's what it boils down to.
See,
you want to protect
Euron. That's exactly what it is. So it's kind of crazy that card, which I'm sure 90% of people thought when they first saw it was like, man, this card is not good. It's never going to see play. It's going to sit in my box. And now everyone's like, auto include 3 of. I really hope I get it from first turn on. Yeah. It's like just crazy.
But like at the time you had what, building orders? Okay, you can look at the top 10 cards of your deck.
Yeah, it's summons.
Oh, summons, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't big on searching the entire deck at the start of the game. The search effects were very limited.
Once that escalated.
Yeah. Oh, boy, did it escalate.
Let's do 10 cards. Let's do 60.
Oh, man. Well, okay. Tell you what, then that, I think, kicks me over to the next card, which is one of those search cards, At the Gates. It's flipping everywhere. It's probably the starting plot on, 3/4 of decks? Easy at the moment?
Probably more.
Yeah.
It's At the Gates, or it's Various Riddle.
Hoping to catch the other person's at the gates.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gotcha.
I think that At the Gates probably needs to be restricted just because of how widely used it is. But I don't know what other option you have to open with, and I don't think they would ever do that because of the whole let's make city plots a thing, and you have no other good city plot opener.
Yeah, or almost no other good city plots. Like, that's the thing that gave me pause at first, was that it kind of breaks city plots. But, like, let's be honest. For the most part, city plots are just already broken, right? Like, City Besieged sees some play, and I guess Spiders is borderline worthwhile to copy City Besieged? But everything else is just dross, right?
I mean, maybe if it said, like, you had to get a gate, like, so you can't get the Great Halls or anything like that. It says, like, you have to go search your deck for, like, 1-cost gate and put it into play.
That's still pretty solid, really, though.
Oh,
right?
It is.
Like, you're netting a location search. Like, you're basically getting a guaranteed, like, draw. You're getting an extra gold that turn and all the turns to follow, unless you traded that gate in for card draw, which then means you maybe got, you know, a couple extra cards. Like, that's still a really
But compared, I think majority of people in life would be okay with you getting a gate besides dropping a Great Hall and then marshaling down a Great Hall. So
dropping a gate and along then marshaling a gate, just not the same.
Well, because you're not, you know, getting that instant gold, like you have to wait on that marshalling phase for that next gate. So I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it does slow up probably just enough that now Greyjoy doesn't get to play their 7-drop and 3-drop. So it could slow them up just a little bit.
What about the argument that in a game that's so dependent on starts and setups that not having a good start or setup after your mulligan, this gives you kind of an out to get back in the game instead of having to be decided on that turn, on that setup, on that first turn when you get location screwed. Now my deck's definitely not going to work, and I have no control over that. So I think maybe, now that I think about it, you leave it and give it as an option to allow people not to have to lose on turn one.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I would not restrict it. Like I said, I had maybe that errata that have to get a gate. Just knowing that the gates, for the most part, aside from the moon, are most of the time being ditched for their draw effect eventually. But the way the game is right now, especially Greyjoy being the primary location destruction faction, especially like Night Flyers and things along those lines, if you set up gold and then at the gate and then marshal gold, I mean, you're pretty set, you know, for...
Yeah, you're probably good for the game.
Most of the game right now, and that's just like, I mean, don't want to, you know, cross-reference too much, but like Magic the Gathering was always like, if I can, you know, drop mana, you know, my first three or four turns, I'm good. Like, and a lot of games are like that. If you can get your resources, you know, on your first few turns, but when you start missing your resources or your location drops, and then your opponent's hitting their location drops, and now they're getting, you know, three more gold than you a turn, four more gold than you a turn, you're never going to be able to catch up. So kind of like Tyler says, this card can fix that bad setup, or at least aid in it. So it's not just like, oh, I'm going to throw my hands up because I missed my setup gold and I didn't draw gold or locations, you know, on that first turn. Because if you miss setup and marshal on locations, I mean, you're struggling. You're going to be struggling.
I'm torn in the end about this one. I don't know that it's quite strong enough to really justify a restriction from just a pure power level perspective, but it's just so ubiquitous that I'm tired of it, and I would really like that to be reined in. So I think I've come around to errata, and I think the gate errata is probably a reasonable middle ground to pull it back just a bit.
And that's like a struggle that, I mean, a lot of people might have is with this many cards in a card pool, and you put out like this one economy, you know, low plot, and now everyone plays it instead of like, there needs to be like, you know, an ABC option. You know, it feels like, I mean, no one's playing a Noble Cause anymore. Or, I mean, Late Summer Feast will see some play. But I mean, you can't just drop a plot and then, you know, like you said, 90% of people just play it automatically because there's just no other better option.
So is that kind of where I was going? Is the solution to have one or two or three other opening plots that are better than what we have now? Is that the option?
I mean, for economy.
Oh, to print more going
forward?
Right.
I mean, if the game had developed at least one, if not two other plots that you can say, okay, I'm going to start at the gates or this card, and it's going to have pros and cons for doing both, or either or, would that alleviate the problem and the need to restrict it? If the obvious reason to restrict is because everyone's playing it, maybe there should have been other options to go with instead of just restricting the card?
Yeah, I mean, I think, theoretically speaking, that would have been the ideal, right? Because I don't think this is just completely out there from a power level perspective in the game. It's just in comparison to other starter plots. So yeah, if other starter plots were kind of brought up to this level, then I'd probably just be fine with that.
But I think the game always had an issue with starter plots. I mean, you had like a Noble Cause, and then trading was printed, so then you had to make that decision. Do I want essentially 7 gold with a Noble Cause and the lose initiative, or do I want 10 gold, but I'm giving my opponent 3, but I'm probably going to win initiative. And then it came to like a Time of Plenty, which was like, okay, now I get 6 gold,
but I have to give my opponent a card draw and me a card draw. So, I mean, there's never been, like, great options, I don't feel like. Because I really don't like trading or a Time of Plenty. And I probably actually like a Noble Cause more so than those two, even now.
I think that a card where you maybe get a higher gold, higher initiative with no claim might have been a good option to go with as a starting plot. So it can give people that option. I can't believe they really didn't explore something like that. Because isn't there one in the draft pack that's like that, where you can choose to get more gold, but then you get zero claim, or you can choose
to
get
higher
claim? Yeah, but that's such a... That particular choice is such a rough choice. No claim for a turn in this game is pretty big.
Yeah, I think it was like 2 gold and 2 claim, and either got plus 5 gold... or got like minus 2 claim or something like that. So essentially a 7 gold plot.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can wrap up the last few cards here. The next card I've got is kind of related on theme here. So let's give it a whirl. Great Hall. is it or Gates of the Moon the most commonly searched card with At the Gates? I'm going to go with Great Hall at the moment due to the prevalence of Great.
Well, I personally don't like Gates of the Moon.
Well, that's because you're playing Greyjoy. You'd rather have Great Hall.
I mean, probably.
Which is the card that we're discussing.
What do you got, Tyler?
So, yeah, I think to answer the question, I think Great Hall's definitely searched more. You know, maybe they're running a Gates and a Great Hall, and then you search Great Hall if you don't need the Gates, but I think it's more prevalent than that. I know that Glazer is a big proponent of restricting this card. I just don't know if we start restricting all the economy cards, what some factions are going to play, but. Maybe he doesn't worry about that at Martell. So,
I do feel like we came
I don't think
to like,
anything inherently wrong with it.
I felt like we came to an understanding yesterday, though, like in the Facebook group, that if Great Hall was unique, it probably wouldn't be so bad.
I would get behind
I think that's a very reasonable way to handle it. The decks that still like want to play the big dudes that this. Help support can do that. You know, you can add Gates it, which is still a huge like boost to start out, but you're not like setting up some kind of limited location, searching up a Great Hall, then dropping a second Marsh Lane.
Exactly.
Well, as Bob said earlier, that's you're pretty much set for the game at that point.
You're set. Yeah, but having it be unique was probably the best. Yeah, a rat of that to make it unique. Like, overall, I love the design of the card, how it's, like, one for one on a unique character that's, like, less than, you know, 6. But then you get 2 for, you know, 6 or more. So I like the design of it, but definitely probably should have been unique.
Yeah, I think that one's such an easy, elegant fix compared to... potential fixes for all sorts of other cards.
I mean, really, everyone could just like get out like a little marker and just like put a little circle around it and just play it.
Draw a little flag there.
We can handle this ourselves.
Yeah. Don't even worry about it, Danny. We got this one taken care of. They're going to put a little mark on this one.
Custom FAQ for Nationals. That's a joke. Just in case anybody's listening to this. Okay, so next card then. This is kind of related earlier to hints that you guys would rather do something about Rickon. Here's another card with search in the name. Ban, Errata, Restrict, or Leave Sea of Blood alone. Of course, I'm throwing things off by picking a couple cards that are currently on the list. So leave it the hell alone, I think, would probably equate to take it off the list. So, should it stay where it is?
I think Sea of Blood needs to be taken off the restricted list. And
look, someone understands
me. I don't think there's... I understand that it's very, very good as far as the icon-specific agendas go, but I think it gives you some versatility that you need in the meta right now to take away some of the prowess that the Greyjoy and Starks have right now in all the tournaments. It's going to open the door to other factions to come in and play and be relevant again. I think Night's Watch, Sea of Blood can be a real thing, especially if they could have another restricted card too, like a Trade Routes or something. I think Tyrell maybe could be able to do something with it. Targ for sure.
The question, is if you take this back off, would Greyjoy and Stark just still be at the top of the heap of houses that can play this? Or would making a bunch of these other theoretical changes we've been talking about rein them in enough that they aren't just still the top of the heap with this?
Like, my problem with it even being restricted was that it was just targeting, like, one faction, one deck. Like, if a card is so busted, which, like, a lot of people, you know, you can read it and be like, okay, that's a really good card. But if it was busted, like, six factions would be using it right now. Like, more than half the factions would be just rolling out Sea of Bloods like crazy. So there is still have to have, like, a deck design for it to make it, you know, maximum efficiency. But if, like, Sea of Blood was, like, off the list, and then you put, like, two of the three Greyjoy fatties, like, on the list, and they would have to, you know, choose, okay, I don't get, you know, Balon, Euron, and Vic in my Sea of Blood deck, but now I only get, like, you know, one of those guys or two of those guys. I do think it helps, you know, limit it. But you can also even add cards. Like, really, Sea of Blood was great with Isle of the Ravens. So, I mean, if Isle of the Ravens either rotated out or was added to a restricted list, I mean, now it kind of, you know, takes away some of its value. And you could just go from there. I mean, you can say, okay, you can play Put to the Torches or Put to the Swords. You don't get both. You can only choose one. But
ooh, that would be a choice.
Overall. Yeah, but, I mean, no one's even playing it right now. And that's, like, the thing. And even Stark. Stark Sea of Blood likes Wyman, probably, but you don't need Wyman in that build, is, like, the thing. So, but again, it's like no one's playing it. So if it's, like, so busted, you know, it's not like Wars to Come with, you know, 50% of the population, you know, playing it. It was just really much this Greyjoy Sea of Blood, just because they had the characters, they had the intimidate, kill, and they can put to the sword, put to the torch, we do not sow, you know, all in one turn, which was, you know, a bit much. But yeah, I would like to see that card off the restricted list, but have more Greyjoy cards or more cards that really synergize with the Sea of Blood onto a restricted list.
Okay. Tyler, final verdict?
Yeah, I think we take it off and try to better restrict the things that synergize well with it, because I think in and of itself, it's not necessarily busted, but it synergizes well with the deck that also happens to be, or the faction that also happens to be the best faction in the game right now. But again, when you restricted it, you didn't take Greyjoy out of being the best faction. They just went another route because the best cards in the Greyjoy Sea of Blood deck were these other cards that they just play in a different agenda. So, you know, that didn't solve the problem.
We're going to take away an agenda. Stark is still playing all the great cards by five or more. And we're going to add a gen that says win a power by 5 or more. So, got them.
Exactly. It solved the problem.
I think all of our characters just have military and power.
A different agenda that lets you search. I'm feeling kind of bad that Reigns of Castamere doesn't let you, like, search your collection for a scheme plot and reveal it or something. Like, everything else lets you search after their challenges.
With Reigns, I think it still needs, like, one or two more schemes to make it, you know, better.
Like a full extra 7, like an all-scheme 7-card plot deck?
I mean, it's just, like, there's so...
Like, to mirror your regular 7.
But this is, like, the schemes are so limited, so you're already automatically playing the same, like, 3 or 4 schemes, like, in most decks. I don't know. That's, like, another topic, but I think a card that should be banned, just to add one more to your list, would be the Annals of Castle Black. Because I think that would allow Wheels Within Wheels to come out off the restricted list, in which I think that'd be a perfect card for Reigns.
That would definitely be a shot in the arm.
Yeah, yeah. But having like a really good scheme like that, but really it has to be on a restricted list because Annals is on the restricted list as well. So if you just ban Annals of Castle Black, which it should just be banned, then you can possibly take off Wheels Within Wheels in my scenario. And then people might play Reigns more to have like an actually really good scheme to play.
Okay, I can see that. Ooh. I'm all for boosting Reigns. And I think at this point it's pretty clear that Annals basically just pushes some kind of degenerate combo deck these days. So, yeah.
Well, I believe there's a card called... Was it Yawgmoth's Will in Magic the Gathering? Which just allowed you to play cards out of the graveyard, and everyone knows how that went. So, good job, FFG. Good job.
Well, damn it, we're not going to learn from Magic the Gathering. We're not Magic the Gathering.
That would be silly.
Okay.
No one wants to be like those people.
I think we had... one more out of my 10, and that is, how about Mace Tyrell? While we're making all these other changes, it's been, about a year, just over a year maybe, since Tyrell was particularly good. I think partly due to the restriction of Mace and Hightower, Fleabottom and all that jazz that it all at once. I think, was Trade Routes at that same time, too? There was a lot.
Yeah. And wars to come. Yeah.
Yeah. So can we pull something off of there? I feel like Mace would be my choice. I feel like you pull him off and errata him, give him like a twice per round limit, similar to Fat Cat. And then now he's a strong option to build around, but not nearly as fast as he was.
I mean, like, I think if Mace got taken off the restricted list, I think the Heir to the Throne would have to be added, just because we don't want people getting, you know, Mace first turn by losing a Decime or Desmarais or whatever her name is, you know. I think that might be a little bit too good to drop out a 2-drop Tyrell Lord or Lady, and then, whoop, now he's Mace. So, I mean, there would have to be, like, some, okay, if this one goes off, then something else has to go on, I think.
I think that you really need to play him in the current meta to see how good he is now. Because, like you said, you restrict the trade routes, you restrict wars to come, so now you have to have gold every phase to pay not only to bring cards out of shadows, which I think is what a lot of people's fear is, taking them off. You have to pay for them to come out, and you got to have the extra gold to put power onto him without having Hightower, but I guess you could play Hightower as a restricted card. But then again...
Right.
Yeah, but then you don't get the trade routes.
You still don't get Fleabottom or the trade routes or the wars to come. I feel like you can loosen it up a little bit and let people pick... Like, you can still have Mace as your center point, and then you can pick one of those support tools to go with him. And, you know, it gives you some room potentially to play around with different types of mace decks, right? Maybe there are some that do one high tower. That's probably the most common solution, of course. But maybe there are others that want to fiddle around with churning through cards real fast with, what's the Informer? And then bring them back with Flea Bonnet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and triggering him that way. That sort of thing. Like, I think you could tinker around with a couple different types of builds.
Well, I mean,
are you talking about the ambush person, the Old Town Informer, or the
scheming septon, or
the one with bestow is the one I was thinking of.
Okay,
yeah, that's the Old Town, ambush one.
Yeah, and I think like what Tyler said. Yes. I mean, it's all about okay. It's been like a year now, or almost a year. I think it was like October or so when they got banned. So approaching a year.
No, I think it was it after Nationals? Okay. I was thinking it was just before, but maybe it was just after.
I know it's been roughly a year. But yeah.
We'll call it a year.
So I mean, I made one of those wonderful Facebook posts a couple days ago in regards to, you know, my vision. And I did say, let's take, you know, Mace and Hightower both off the list, you know, and everyone's like, oh man, this guy's so crazy. He doesn't know how to play a Game of Thrones. And I mean, possibly, you know.
I mean, but that's true. That's actually a fact.
But little do they know, I went and did like some research on the annals of Castle Black, and I looked through like some Jousting Pavilion like tournaments. As much as people was an uproar about Mace Hightower, it never won like a whole lot, especially like in North America. I think WAMA won like European Continentals with it, but in North America. I mean, it placed high in a lot of tournaments. Now, I know there's probably different builds to it. You know, maybe it started out with, like, HRD, with, like, Bitterbridge, and I know it went to Summer and Wars to Come. But it didn't win, like, any major, you know, tournaments. I want to say one of the tournaments I saw it won was, like, a Dance of Dragons 3. So it wasn't, like, this oppressive deck. I mean, it was a really good deck. And it was a deck that can win without doing challenges, or could win outside of the challenge phase to close out, which is always annoying. But it wasn't like something that was like everyone was playing it, because it's, you know, it's kind of a passive power deck, which not everyone plays that style as well. It's not, you know, some people might not find that fun to play. But even like that Gen Con that Tyler won, I think I looked at it and it was like 20% of the field was like Mace Hightower, which, I mean, sounds like a lot, but it was like a 100-person tournament. I mean, go to tournaments now in the last 8 months, and it's like Greyjoy Prince is, you know, 40% of the field, you know, and it's been like that. And if it wasn't Greyjoy Prince, it was Greyjoy Sea of Blood, which I think have higher, you know, turnouts than what Mace and Hightower did. That's even during like their heyday.
Interesting.
I think along that same vein is we never saw what Mace did in a Sea of Blood meta. I think if you constantly have to protect Mace, constantly have to protect Hightower, when you have Greyjoy Sea of Blood or Targ Sea of Blood, Stark Sea of Blood, constantly applying that pressure to claim military, plus a put to the sword every turn, that changes the landscape dramatically. So if you're going to take Sea of Blood off and then also take Mace and or Hightower off, that's going to be an interesting meta call, because now you have to not only worry about, you know, other decks doing what they're doing, but now you have to worry about how to meta against a constant onslaught of military challenges.
Yeah, I mean, back when I was playing Mace, even like without Sea of Blood, military was a real like hole for the deck. It was a real problem. Just kind of standard Stark aggro sometimes just kept hitting you with more military than you could deal with. It was a real problem. Allowing Sea of Blood, whew, that might actually be more than Mace could handle.
Yeah. But then you also have to look at, I mean, and you mentioned it earlier, Will. I mean, the Targ box is like right on the horizons. That's why I'd rather see, I don't want to see like an FAQ or a new list until after maybe the target box, because I don't want it to, I mean, it seems like every box is having, you know, two or three cards that are like, wow, this is, you know, broken, but now we have to wait 4 or 5 months until, you know, someone does something about it. So maybe actually see, okay, how does Targ, you know, change this whole landscape now? Because they're probably going to burn stuff, and they're probably going to have more Dothraki, which is, you know, more military. So I think it's going to be more of an aggro type box.
I definitely think so. It's going to push Dothraki. I mean, along with it seems to maybe be pushing Voltron Danny, but I bet Dothraki will be the secondary theme.
And just like, you know, playing events that get dragons out. So let's go search your deck for a dragon and ambush him in.
Didn't we talk about searching your entire deck and how that was good?
You just get like a 6-cost dragon.
I feel like that came up at some
point. Yeah.
I think that the problem we're going to have, though, is they're not going to want to release an FAQ updated restricted list right after they put this new product out either.
Yeah.
So more than likely, we're going to get an update, the box will hit, and then 4 months later, we'll get another updated restricted
list. Probably right before Worlds or something like
that. Maybe, if we're lucky.
I bet so.
Yeah. And a lot of it, like when I, you know, made that post, was all about, I mean, we have to get more factions and more decks like into that tier one or even like tier two. Like you need a variety. And right now, I mean, Tyrell does have, I think, a solid Kingdom of Shadows deck. But how many cards are actually Tyrell in that deck? I don't know. I haven't looked at it, you know, too extensively.
Not very many.
Probably not a lot.
Unexpected Guile and the house card, but I would like to see what it would look like, you know, having Mace and or Hightower. And if people want to just have one, that's fine. I understand the whole trade route thing, especially since the Mace deck is probably going to be a Shadows deck, and what we all know about Shadows is it's slow and it costs a lot of money to get everything out that you need. Yeah, I mean, anything else would be interesting, and like, if it works, then great. Now Tyrell has like a really solid deck. If it doesn't work, then it's like, I guess we can play Kingdoms of Shadows again.
And I think along those lines, Mace still has to compete with Greyjoy Prince that was promised, and the speed there, and Greyjoy Crossing, and the speed there. And start crossing the speed there. I mean, those decks are fast. They can win turn two, turn three. It's a completely different meta than it was back when Mace Hightower was so prevalent.
Okay, well, I've got an actual extra special bonus round 11th card on my list here to spring on you guys. So here we go. Bear with me here. I know this one's probably going to be the most controversial of my choices. Ban, Errata, Restrict, or Leave It the Hell Alone, the White Book agenda.
Do you have that handy so I can read it?
Okay. Here. I will go find it real quick. Then I will...
Oh, wait. I just opened up my chapter pack. All right, here we go, the White Book. You may include non-loyal Kingsguard characters from any faction in your deck. You must include at least 7 different Kingsguard characters in your deck. Reaction. After you win a challenge, kneel your faction card to stand each defending Kingsguard character you control, each participating Kingsguard character you control instead if you control a King or a Queen character. I really just read all this and I don't know what it does.
You can play out of house Kingsguard and you can stand them.
Okay.
Sort of.
Huh. Yeah.
Also,
what if we instead go back and redo all of the Kingsguard characters.
Ooh, yeah. And
make them better.
Yes.
Now, do they actually like have they 7 printed right now?
There's 11. I looked it up when we did the review. There's 11. But for the record, okay. Only about 2 interact or have abilities that really work with each other, and about 2 work with the White Book agenda in some appreciable way, i.e., like, they have renown, so I suppose standing them to get more renown might be useful.
But isn't but Barristan Selmy Baratheon, he already stands, right, to save a character?
Right. So he doesn't, much with this. Yeah. Yeah, it's a mess. I think my option, my suggestion is probably to just ban this one and then just start from scratch with a new one. I think it would take too much errata on this card or too much on other cards to make something playable.
Was this a card in the first edition or 1.0?
There was a White Book agenda. It was also really terrible in first edition. Not going to lie, I tried to beg Danny, for the love of Pete, please make me a playable White Book agenda.
Uh-huh.
This, of course, being at the time when the Wars to Come agenda and podcast were going, right? So it was the height of the Wars to Come agenda, and I'm like, this grates at me that the only time there's been a White Book agenda was terrible, and now there's this other podcast named for an agenda, and it's friggin' awesome. So I begged for it, and this is what I got. This is what I got. For the record, the first ed White Book agenda said, if you control at least one Kingsguard character, claim 1 power for your house each time you successfully defend a challenge. Then, each time you lose a challenge as the attacker, kneel a standing Kingsguard character you control or discard 1 power from your house. So it was the attempt at core wall, I guess, in first ed. Vaguely, sort of. There wasn't a Night's Watch faction, of course, in first edition that had kind of winning defensively as a theme. So,
okay, so
yeah, this didn't see play either.
Maybe one of you guys can answer this. I'd never read any, you know, books about this card game, A Game of Thrones. I did watch the TV show. Now, is the White Book the book that Brienne is writing in about, like, Jaime?
Yes,
correct.
The, okay. The White Book is the history book for the Kingsguard.
Okay, all right. I assume the White Book has something to do with Kingsguard. It's just, you know, one of those guys that doesn't read books. But okay.
I think that Danny owes you an apology. Because
I'm not sure he does, because I don't think he ever actually said he would. I begged for it. I don't think he ever agreed to it.
It would have been a solid if he was like, hey, will you read over this card? Just, you know, in case you think it's awful, or do you have any ideas of what you wanted to say?
Yeah, that would have been great.
But I do think it goes back to what Tyler just mentioned earlier. Like, Kingsguards aren't really even playable in their own factions aside from, Mandon Moor.
I was going to say, the Shadows ones, I think, are playable. Yeah, yeah. So is Sir Robert Strong.
Yeah.
The new Shadows Knight of Flowers is fairly playable. So, like, the 3 Shadows ones are fairly playable. And they sort of have a little bit of synergy, I guess.
And you could just play them in the Kingdom of Shadow deck?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay.
There's just no actual reason to pull the Kingsguard together.
Okay.
They don't have synergy with each other, though. It's just that they're all good cards in the Shadows deck.
Right.
Like, Robert Strong isn't interacting with, you know, Mandon Moore in any way, or even with Renly, other than the fact that he can stand Renly, but that any card out of Shadows can do that.
Yeah.
So there's no synergy there at all.
Or there's even the Jaime that does some stuff with Kingsguard, right? It gives them intrigue icons. But then his other ability is each knight character you can... He's got one ability that references knights. Each knight character you control gains renown while attacking alone, and then challenges, choose a Kingsguard character till the end of the phase that character gains an intrigue icon. Right? So I guess his intrigue ability applies to a few of those Kingsguard, but the knight ability that gives them renown is effectively turned off by the agenda, because the agenda wants you to have all the knights participate at once to win by a bunch and then stand them. So, like, just nothing gels at all.
Yeah.
Wasn't Jamie's Kingsguard card from 1.0 really good, too?
Yeah, he had a Shadows version that drew cards. It was, how did it work?
When a Kingsguard character comes out of Shadows, he could draw two cards or something.
I think it was like draw a card, or if you had multiple Kingsguard, draw multiple cards or something. Let's where was he? After a card comes out of Shadows, draw one card.
He worked really well with the free
guy. Or
draw
three cards instead if you control three or more Kingsguard characters. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I would have taken almost an exact reprint of the first edition Shadows Kingsguard. That would have been pretty sweet. I liked all of them quite a lot.
That would have been really good, and it would give you an option to play that agenda in effect that doesn't have card draw to draw cards.
Yeah, exactly. Go figure.
Yeah. I feel like this card was, like, made a long time ago, because, like, the power level that some of these agendas have been having.
Yeah.
And now this, I mean, I would rather play King of Winter over this agenda. I would.
I think.
The bold statement.
I think it's more likely to have an impact on the game.
Man. I'm sorry, Will.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
There's only, what, 363 episodes of this that you've done? Was it 363? I don't know.
This is 393 that we're doing right now. So.
393.
Yeah.
Man. What could have been?
You would think
I this is
paid
definitely
my
a
dues,
ban.
But no.
Yeah. No, this is definitely a ban because there's not enough to eradicate it. There's nothing in the text. Maybe we can use, like, you may, and then ...
Do
fill it in yourself.
We even ban it, though? Do we just leave it alone, put it in the box, and pretend like
no,
it never
happened? No, we ban it so that a new one can be printed
that too.
And playable.
I mean, I can assure you one of my copies might have, you know, some autographs from maybe members of the White Book on it. Maybe I'll, you know, use it as a way to get some nice little autographs.
If anybody wants my signature on their White Book this weekend at Nationals, I will definitely do that.
Because I will definitely never need three.
Also,
yeah.
What if we put a caveat, if anyone wins a tournament with more than 40 people with this agenda, that they get to come on the show and talk about how awesome they are.
Not only that, like, I will straight up buy them a White Book t-shirt. If somebody wins a 40-man tournament with this agenda,
there you go.
They're coming on the show, and I will buy them a White Book t-shirt.
I mean, 40 seems high. Let's say, like, 24 or more.
24, you said?
How about 30-ish? I feel like the neck scene,
there we go.
Those guys in the Northeast usually average about 30.
That seems like a reasonable cutoff. 30 man or larger, one with the White Book agenda.
And
I should clarify, this award only goes to the first person to do that. I'm not going to get in over my head where miraculously, you know, 12 people win tournaments in the next month with it.
And they will have a meal on me. I will DoorDash or Uber Eats, Grubhub. I'll get them food to their location.
Awesome. That is a challenge.
One meal capped at $25.
One meal. I think I get a free delivery the first time I sign up for one of those apps. So,
yeah, I think you're right. Kristen and I actually signed up for, I think it was Grubhub while we were in San Diego, so we could do that. And we were super excited about the free delivery. And then we went to check out and realized, oh, delivery would have been $2. Oh, cool. Oh. Well.
Man.
Oh, well. Oh, well. All right, let's do a little props and or slops. I mainly just have one slop at the moment, and that's going to be to getting older and throwing out my back. Did that doing some yard work this past weekend. It's still not 100%, but at least it's better than it was because I was real worried about what things were going to be Cup Nationals. So,
but it wasn't a yard work. Was like landscaping stuff, wasn't it? This like real deal.
Okay, yeah. See, you are
not
correct.
Just raking.
It was landscaping stuff. It was moving some tree stumps that my should I call him stepfather-in-law? I guess helped rip out of the ground for us. So.
All right, just wanted to make sure the listeners wasn't
just
thinking you were blowing around some leaves with a leaf blower.
Yeah, I didn't throw out my back riding the riding lawnmower. So that
I hate to be that guy, but you know, Eddard Stark, by the time he was your age, had already won a major war over throwing a family with heritage of ruling the entire kingdom and was warden of the
North. He was the second most powerful man.
So, you know, there's that.
Good to know. He also had, what, five?
Not comparing anyone.
Yeah. Ugh. Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. I don't even know what to say.
My prop is this upcoming weekend. You know, to visit Will and the guys in Springfield, Missouri. I know that Will's done a lot of hard work. And is still doing some hard work on this event to make it the best as possible. That's super exciting to be a part of that. And playing in a castle seems like pretty cool.
Yeah, I hope the venue really pays off. I'm excited for it. So I think it'll be good. I sure hope anyway. It's not Stalic, but a man can dream.
Hey. My second prop. I'm gonna have two props this time. Dove men's body wash, love it. So
interesting.
Was always skeptical of using Dove, you know, because wasn't really known for the men, but now they have a nice little men's line, and man, that soap just lathers up really well. Loving some Dove body wash. So if they're listening, anyone listening that knows Dove and needs a spokesman or a commercial, would love to do it. Would love to do it. Any listeners out there, get me in contact.
Send it right to Bob.
What do you got, Tyler?
Well, there you go. Well, I think I would like to have a slop for our co-host missing in action.
Oh, yeah.
For deciding not to come on tonight and be a part of this wonderful podcast. It really an enlightening experience if you think about it. And he chose not to be a part of it tonight. So we don't need to name names.
And the listeners know where his priorities are.
Everyone else knows who he is.
Oh, we do.
Exactly. I mean, some might call that a Jeff move.
Ooh, a Jeff move.
Wow, bold move, Cotton. Let's see how it pays off.
I think Jeff says if he's going to do something, he's going to do it. So, we'll see.
He does.
I mean,
he does.
I guess at that point, maybe we have him on the show.
That is his redeeming quality.
Maybe the next time our unnamed co-host taps out, maybe we invite Jeff on.
No.
Maybe he'll just win U.S. Nationals and get the free invite.
Is he going to win it with the white book?
I I mean, he knows food is on the line.
Okay, well,
we could read that card to him ten times and he wouldn't know what it
meant. To be fair, I'm still not convinced that Bob does either, but, you know. Yeah,
I'm going to have to read
that. It's fine. You can space out. Sure. You're not missing anything. Oh, well, okay. All right. That's bound to be wandering somewhere dangerously adjacent to the danger zone. So let's close this chapter of the white book.